It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of CBD. You can participate and have your specific questions answered by emailing sweethomecannabama.com. And now for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jennifer Boozer Stewart. You're listening to Sweet Home Cannabama Radio right here on FM Talk 106.5 every Monday night at 7 o'clock for over 7 years now, 7 years and 1 week. We have been talking about hemp and cannabis policy, everything you can name that surrounds this plant, the controversy, the love of it, the stigma, all the things. And we're happy to still be here after 7 years, even after last year's disastrous HB 445. If you are watching from YouTube or social media, share the show with your friends and subscribe so we can keep this message going. We are heard in Florida Panhandle, Alabama, and Mississippi Gulf Coast, along with other counties around us, and live streaming, of course, to the whole wide world. I want to get into the current events, because last week, a bill that's been introduced several times since 2021 has been reintroduced. It's called the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act, or the CAOA. This is the July 2026 version. And it is a comprehensive federal marijuana legalization bill reintroduced in July of 2026, just last week, and to the U.S. Senate. So it would federally decriminalize marijuana by fully removing it or descheduling it from the Controlled Substances Act. Now, we know that the government has descheduled medical cannabis, or rescheduled it to Schedule 3 from Schedule 1, and that adult use, or the horrible word, recreational, which I think trivializes the value of cannabis, but recreational or adult use is still considered Schedule 1, and there are components of, even from the hemp plant, that are now considered Schedule 1. And so, but this would completely take it off the Controlled Substances Act and deschedule it completely. It would end federal criminalization of marijuana by removing it from the CSA. It clearly and unambiguously decriminalizes marijuana at the federal level. It creates pathways for reduced sentences and automatic expungement of past marijuana convictions. Basically, set up a system to automatically expunge previous marijuana convictions. It establishes an opportunity trust fund for job training, reentry, youth programs, legal aid, and health education. And that would be from the taxes. No mention of how much the tax would be in the information that I have yet. It advances public health by easing research restrictions and forming a cannabis products advisory committee. So again, if it's not scheduled, then anybody can research it. It restricts youth access and bans youth-targeted marketing. That's self-explanatory. Promotes fairness for small businesses by ending the 280E tax penalties, which we've discussed previously on the show many times, and creates an SBA-based equity program. And I'm assuming that that would also include access to things like SBA business loans. And it protects workers by clarifying their rights, enabling unionization, and strengthening OSHA protections. And this, you know, it, compared to rescheduling is not enough. You know, rescheduling doesn't really change anything. It does not end the federal criminalization. It doesn't legalize it in any way, shape, or form. You will still go to jail if you have it and you don't have the right paperwork or any paperwork. And the 2026 DOJ order only rescheduled FDA-approved marijuana drugs and state-licensed medical cannabis products. So the three or four drugs that they have synthesized, which is a word they love to demonize us with, like Marinol, which is synthetic THC that you can get from a pharmacy by doctor's prescription, And then anything that is state medical cannabis program approved. So that would go state by state. And adult use, again, remains Schedule 1. So nothing has changed there. Those businesses get no breaks. They get no tax incentives. They get none of the protections that medical cannabis businesses would. Same product, just different paperwork. And then the mandatory minimums, immigration consequences, federal penalties remain unless it's fully descheduled. And then, of course, there's still going to be research barriers without congressional action with rescheduling as opposed to descheduling. So we hope, you know, like I said, this has been introduced many times since 2021, and it never goes anywhere, but one can hope. I guess if you would call the people in the cannabis industry anything, it would be hopeless hopers. We never run out of hope, and maybe we're crazy. But we, you know, I think a lot of people would agree with me that those of us who have been in this in any sort of way, we've just seen too much. We know too much. We have seen too many things that are amazing and, in my opinion, miraculous to just walk away and say, oh, well, we give up. We know the potential of this plant, and nothing short of descheduling is going to satisfy the people of the United States. I mean, we've got like an 80%+ approval rating among polled voters in this country. It's kind of crazy because, you know, our elected officials are not considering what the voters actually want. They're just doing what they do. Sound familiar, Alabama? So in our summer series, Back to Basics, we have been discussing what cannabis is and what it does. And we had two great shows back to back with Dr. Lakeisha about what it does. And so next week, we're going to go in depth with how it works and do a deep dive into the endocannabinoid system. And so tonight's guest, I'm really excited about. I've been following him for a while. He is local to the area, and he is going to help us kind of further expound on that important point of what it does, you know, and in a specific way. And then we will follow up next week with our deep dive on the ECS. If you or someone you know has a child with autism spectrum disorder, stop right now and please invite them to listen in or watch, share this broadcast, because our guest and I are going to be specifically talking about autism spectrum disorder, and I think you'll be surprised at what you might hear. So if you would share the replay later on, if you can't get a hold of them or you don't have time to do it now, share the replay, and hopefully we can give some parents some good insight and help and direct them to the type of doctors that know how to utilize the things we're going to talk about tonight for children and adults with autism spectrum disorder. Tonight's guest is Dr. Preston Brooks. Dr. Brooks is the founder of Blair Complex Care, a functional medicine practice established in 2023. After earning his bachelor's degree in business, he completed his Doctor of Chiropractic degree at Life University. His clinical focus includes autism spectrum disorder, PANS, PANDAS, chronic infections, Lyme disease, mold illness, gastrointestinal dysfunction, immune dysregulation, environmental toxicities, and genetic pathway analysis. Dr. Brooks's journey into functional medicine began with his daughter, Blair. Born in 2014, Blair developed normally during infancy before gradually regressing between the ages of 2 and 4, losing her speech, eye contact, and other developmental skills. Determined to find answers, he spent years researching the underlying medical factors that could contribute to autism. Comprehensive laboratory testing revealed multiple physiological imbalances, and by combining targeted biomedical interventions with conventional therapies, Blair began to regain speech, social engagement, and many of the abilities she had lost. Inspired by Blair's recovery, Dr. Brooks founded Blair Complex Care to help other families search for and address the underlying contributors to chronic illness. His philosophy is that many children with complex neurological and developmental conditions benefit from a thorough evaluation of immune, gastrointestinal, metabolic, infectious, environmental, and nutritional factors with care tailored to each individual's unique needs. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brooks.
Hey, I appreciate the invitation.
Yes, I've been wanting to interview you for a long time. I follow you, and I haven't seen you post a single thing that I didn't 100% agree with. So I'm excited to talk to you tonight and get into this. Well, we got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to meet Dr. Brooks. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Canabama Radio. Tonight we're talking with Dr. Preston Brooks. Dr. Brooks, I just read your bio and we had to go to a commercial break, so welcome to the show, sir.
That was a heck of a bio.
It really was. I'm impressed.
Yeah, you almost made me tear up a little bit. I got a little emotional. I was like, man, this is...
Well, you know, I can't imagine, you know, I had a child that passed away. And so I know when it comes to hard things with our kids, man, there's not a single thing on the planet we won't do for them. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we'll move mountains. Yeah, faith of a mustard seed, right?
Yes.
But I've got more than that.
So, yes.
No, thanks for letting me be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us where you're located really quickly, because I know there was some confusion.
So I live in Baldwin County.
Okay.
I practice in Mobile in Baldwin County. I do both in-person, in-home,
okay,
and virtual consults. I actually started this practice in my last year of school under the guise of health coaching. And
okay.
So we started doing this across the nation back before I even moved back to Alabama. And so we're able to help anybody and everybody no matter where they're at.
Good, good. But
Olena Wellness in Mobile is an office that I work out of on Mondays and Fridays.
So, okay.
But yeah, we're here in Baldwin County. I went to school in Georgia, but decided to come back to Alabama to a really underserved area.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't receive much help for my daughter when we were here.
Right.
And I knew that the times hadn't changed much. And what is interesting is the RFK and installation of Helm and the timing of that with my graduation,
mm-hmm,
and starting the business. Obviously, most of us didn't foresee something like that being possible and our lifetime, but you know, that was a hill that I was willing to die on gladly. Today I can focus on helping kids to heal and get better and not necessarily fighting that fight per se. But yeah, man, have things come full circle, and here we are, you know, in practice now. The business is 3 years old, and I've learned a lot in a short period of time.
Oh yeah.
I knew a lot going into school. I'm probably one of the only chiropractors who went to chiropractor school to not be a chiropractor.
So you're not out there cracking people's necks all day?
No, I'm not doing that all day. I really kind of reserve that for friends and family and when someone begs me enough. But
right.
I went to get my doctorate in chiropractic really as an avenue for natural health and to be a practitioner to help others heal. And what I had learned through my daughter was already a lot. There was a lot of knowledge there, but without really a background to apply it to others. And so it being kind of the largest natural, you know, health practitioner that there is, you know, under the doctor space,
mm-hmm,
I chose that route, and also I didn't want to get filled with a bunch of vaccines to go through, you know, medical school, and so that played another big.
Wait a minute! They make you take vaccines to go to medical school?
I would imagine so. If they do for the nurses, I was forced to get vaccines before my undergraduate at Auburn. So
I can remember. I can remember them wanting vaccine records when I went to when I started college 30 years ago. 1996.
I graduated high school in 2007, and so we went up to Auburn around that time, shortly thereafter. But I started at Southern Union. I did my, not undergrad, but associate's there before I transferred to Auburn. And what's interesting is when I transferred to Auburn, I was required to get an MMR and one other shot. I don't know exactly what they were.
Yeah.
But that's part of my health journey that we won't get into today.
Right.
It preceded some medical problems of my own that also had to do with medications and whatnot.
I'm glad I come from the generation that only got a few shots.
Yeah, for sure. You guys really did only get a few. I was born in 89, so I was right when they started ramping them up.
And oh, yeah.
Ironically enough, I had asthma as a child, in the first few years. But,
wow.
Yeah, where should we start? You want me to tell?
Well, yeah, tell us about Blair. Tell us about when she was born and when things turned worse and when you knew that she was, I don't want to use the word sick, but something was wrong. Just start with there. I'm sure it's a story that so many people listening can relate to in one way or another. Like I said earlier, kids with autism have a massive range of neurological and physiological issues, but they all sort of overlap at some point or another. So tell us about Blair.
Oh, yeah. Blair was born a normal, perfect, beautiful little girl. 2014, February 2014, and our first child. Everything was going fine. She seemed to be developing, hitting all of our milestones, but around 18 months to 2 years, we noticed that language was just not coming on board like it should have.
Right.
Same advice that's being given to a lot of parents today. Everybody's a late talker. Einstein was a late talker. Everyone develops differently. And so they pushed the milestones out despite them being, tracked for a reason over long periods of time.
Right.
So as a father, my story is probably a little bit different than most because you hear from the moms a lot of the times. But as a father,
right.
I latched on to that bad advice. And was waiting on the day for her to speak. That day never came. Fast forward to almost 2 years, she's almost 4 years old, received a year plus of speech therapy, no progress. And I was finally kind of forced to look at it in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I looked the symptoms up. I knew that it was going to be called autism.
Right.
I wasn't happy with what the Google search was giving me and the options. I knew enough about the body to know that things just don't appear out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really set out with two questions to answer. First one being, what is autism? And the second one being, what do you do about it? How do
right.
you treat it?
Right.
So that led me into the rabbit hole. And, you said at the beginning of the show, we know too much, and I laughed at that, but it's really true.
Yeah.
And so I went down that rabbit hole. The very first thing that I decided to give my daughter, the very first intervention was CBD oil. It was Charlotte's Web. And I found a short little Vice interview of a toddler who was on the spectrum, had been put on Charlotte's Web and had great progress in a short period of time.
Right.
So I knew because of my past, I had used cannabis previously to come off medications, that its safety profile was there, so there was no concern. So we went ahead and started that.
Yeah.
And so it was February of 2018. She was going to turn 4 that day, and she had been on CBD for about 20 days to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sad day as a parent. As a four-year-old, you want them to know it's their birthday.
Right.
She didn't know it was her birthday, and she really didn't even know, you know, her name, and didn't really respond to that either. So,
yeah.
As a parent, I remember singing happy birthday to her probably about 12 times, at least a dozen or more times that day. Just hoping, that, you know, as a parent, that it would sink in, that she would understand,
right.
Like, hey, this is your special day once a year.
Right.
You know, this is right. Your day that we celebrate. You.
Yeah, Daddy hasn't lost his friggin' mind singing this dumb song over and over again. Yeah, no, I can't. I can't imagine.
And so we had already seen a little bit of what I would say some progress those few weeks on the CBD oil. Well, that evening, I sang it to her before we put her to bed that night. And I think it was God, but she let out, I love you, Dad. And I had no functional language, you know, very, very little at all, if any words.
Oh, my gosh.
And that came out. And so words began to kind of come out of her shortly thereafter. We didn't speak in full sentences. You know, that was just
right.
The window. That was God allowing me to see that there was more there.
Amen.
And keep pushing. And so.
Oh, wow.
That was step one. Step two was for me to keep pushing. And
well, that, so, yeah, that was, I believe that was God letting you know, hey, this is, there's something to this. And you're doing the right thing, and keep going because this is helping. And that's a beautiful, beautiful way to experience that little God wink. That hey,
yeah.
It's gonna be okay, man.
Absolutely. And you know, from there we continued, and we saw doctors who were specialized in this. There are a few of us out there. And we treated her gut. We detoxified her through several different avenues. Continued lab testing. We had candida overgrowth, gut dysfunction. You know, and fast forward to when she was 8 years old, we did further testing to actually find out that she had Lyme disease and chronic infection that we were unaware of.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, I hate to cut you off right here in the middle of that, but we have to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick up with Blair after the break. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Canabama Radio. Tonight, we're talking with Dr. Preston Brooks here in the Mobile and Baldwin County area, who is a bit of a specialist on autism. We were just talking about your daughter, Blair, and you talked about detoxifying her and candida overgrowth. Let's kind of go back there and talk about the rest of it.
Yeah, so a lot of kids follow this perfect storm type situation. And, you know, in most cases, the shots are a big drop into the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Mold can be a big one as well.
Yes.
But what every child gets in a lot of cases prior to now are the vaccinations.
Right.
Tylenol has been advised for a long time for fevers to mitigate post-reaction. We now know that shuts down the liver
right.
and prevents detoxification.
Right.
So there's this perfect storm situation that sets up and what I would identify as the genetically susceptible and vulnerable children.
Right.
And it starts with the shots, and then you will get antibiotics, ear infections, and more shots. And for these particular children, it can actually trigger, you know, aggression.
Yeah.
Aggression and development.
Yeah.
It's
crazy that you say the ear infection thing, because I wasn't exactly accurate earlier when I said my son's never been vaccinated. He actually got his 2-month vaccinations. And
okay.
For 18 months after that, he kept a double ear infection. Like he either was on antibiotics or had just been on them. It was miserable. And his and he got and I was a stay-at-home mom. We didn't do daycare. We didn't even do church daycare. And that he got rotavirus, Coxsackie, RSV, all in that 18-month period. And that's when we, after the first or second round, started doing our research and decided we're not going to do vaccines anymore. And we did not vaccinate our other two children at all. But that's crazy that you said the ear infection thing. And I'm more glad than ever that you said that, that we did not continue to follow that that programming of vaccinations, because my none of my kids, other than that, and he got over it, and it didn't cause any permanent damage, but they didn't have allergies. They didn't have behavioral issues, learning issues, you know, aggression, speech problem, none of those things. And they've been very healthy their whole lives. You know, he got the measles once and was fine in like 24 hours.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So the ear infections are a part of a lot of kids.
Yeah, and well, and then staying on the antibiotics, ruining their gut health, because we know even one round of antibiotics, it can take almost a year for your gut to go back to normal on its own.
Yeah. That's what leads to the candida overgrowth, I think, in most cases, or those antibiotics,
which
you know, set up the gut for issues. Absolutely, they are a part of that pathway. We've been told that it's normal for kids that age to get ear infections, and it's just really not.
Think of all the button surgeries.
Their tubes are smaller. Naturally, so they're children.
Right.
The problem is when they become inflamed when they're smaller, that the infections set in. And that inflammation, for me as a practitioner, is a signal that there could be some neuroinflammation as well, just because of the proximity to that area.
Right, to the brain,
absolutely. And so Blair went this pathway, and so we set out to reverse it. Part of that is treating the gut. Part of that is detoxifying the vaccinations. Unfortunately, the part that a lot of practitioners have missed and something that I have hyper-focused in on is the chronic infectious piece.
Mm-hmm.
If a child goes down the pathway that I mentioned, a lot of cases, these environmental triggers will immunocompromise the child early.
Right.
And so the immune system is just not robust. It's not operating the way it should be. It can't fend off the predators.
And they stay sick. Yeah.
They stay sick, and sometimes they're not even mounting an immune response. You don't even know they're sick, and it will manifest as behavioral problems or developmental problems.
Yeah, wow.
And this is now actually something that I'm seeing in adults, both on and off the spectrum.
Wow.
And particularly in Baldwin County, a lot of females between the ages of 6 to 10 years old are actually regressing into what is called PANS or PANDAS.
Yes.
Those conditions are a mouthful of acronyms, but basically they are autoimmune conditions associated with these chronic infections that cross over to the nervous system.
And they have behavioral issues, and they can't regulate their emotions. I have a friend whose daughter has it, and it is different than autism, but there are behavioral issues for sure. She will melt down. Everything has to be really controlled. She has to watch every morsel of food and anything that is in or around her kid's body. And it's very hard on the parents, too. And the little girl doesn't understand why it's happening.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised, Jennifer. It's actually something I've tested this. I'll test the majority of my patients on the spectrum for this.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, 9 out of 10 kids on the spectrum actually have this pathology going on within their bodies.
Wow.
And so I'm actually of the opinion that a large majority of the kids on the spectrum, that this is actually the mechanisms continuing to prevent their development and you know, quality of life.
Right.
A lot of their issues and things that they deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, there's two main categories of kids on the spectrum that I see. To summarize the chronic infectious disease, that's an autoimmune encephalitis. The other is more of a toxic category. They have issues detoxifying.
Right.
But a lot of time there's overlap, and it will be both. But
right.
There are kids that land on one side or the other. So every child is different. But
yeah.
That's one big thing I learned, and I learned that through my own daughter. He didn't fit the diagnostic criteria for pandas, but when you run the laboratories, the blood tests,
right.
Those come back positive. That tells you that there's an issue with the diagnostic criteria, because we need to be using biomarkers and blood tests to treat our children, not diagnostic, clinical boxes being checked by symptoms.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because I'm so curious. A lot, I'm sure, because, we've all been sold the same lies. But I'm sure that some of the parents of these kids, even after they've been diagnosed, continue to vaccinate. And also the diet, because every parent of an autistic kid I ever talk to, they will only eat certain foods, and they're never, a salad. It's Dino Nuggets and a Dr. Pepper and a mac and cheese, or this one brand of, they're very particular, and it's very difficult to change that. But how much of a factor is continuing to vaccinate and this typical terrible diet that a lot of parents, understandably, not knowing what to do and not wanting their kid to starve, will give them anything as long as they're eating something. You know what I mean? What roles do those two things play in the continuing, progression of these disorders?
You'd be surprised. The vast majority of people that I work with are no longer vaccinating.
Yeah.
Most people who work with me are already on board. I have educated a handful of patients in that regard.
Right.
But it's, I strongly advise, if it was my own child, not to do that.
Right.
Because it will prevent healing and recovery, which is the whole reason they're choosing to work with me.
Right.
As far as the diet is the main concern, the biggest issue, along with giving vitamins and supplements. That
right.
can be hard, too.
Right. Getting them to eat healthy food is one thing, but then getting them to do something like CBD oil or chew a vitamin or swallow a capsule of something, that's...
Our kids are smart, though. I've seen...
They are, which is why sometimes it's tricky.
I've seen more time... than I would have ever realized that children will actually participate in taking the CBD, because they've connected the dot between,
this makes
me feel better.
Yes, I've seen that with animals too. Animals that can't tell you what they think or how they feel. Once they know that, hey, when that bottle comes out and I get that little drops, those drops, I feel so much better, and they will beg for it. So, I know that sounds like an oversimplified example, but not being able to say, I feel better,
right.
But yes, they do. They connect the dots. They are very smart.
Absolutely. So getting the supplements in them is one thing, but actually healing the gut is really key to changing the diet.
Right.
The palate and the microbiome go hand in hand, and they were both kind of ruined together. And their diet changes went along with that.
Well, and there's a lot to be said for sugar addiction.
Yeah.
In the brain, chemical addiction in the brain, and how highly addictive sweet things are, especially for a child who isn't sophisticated enough on their best day to understand this is bad for me and I shouldn't do it, even though I really, really want these Skittles.
Right. The candida that we mentioned earlier that comes after the antibiotic usage, that is very glucose-driven. That's its main source of food. And so that can actually drive craving in kids and adults.
100%. My name is Jennifer, and I am a sugar addict. I totally, can you tell? I get it. No, I can't imagine having to deal with that in a small kid. And well, we see it all the time. I mean, you tell a kid they can't have a popsicle and sometimes they'll melt right on down, and it's crazy. Yeah. But you have to remember, it's like cutting somebody off their cocaine supply,
Mm-hmm.
The brain doesn't
mm-hmm.
know the difference.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No.
Wow.
Absolutely not.
Wow. Well, I do know how important a factor nutrition is, because you can do parasite cleansing and heavy metal detoxing, and you can do all the right supplements and things like that. But if you're still putting garbage in your body, it's having to fight that before it can utilize the good stuff. And, you know, again, I was just reading a formula label. First ingredient was sugars. When we come back from the break, we're going to have more with Dr. Preston Brooks. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. Preston Brooks on Sweet Home Canabama Radio, talking about his daughter, autism, and CBD. I wanted to say something about, first, about the milestones being pushed back. I was just reading this week that they have basically pushed back all of the developmental milestones for babies and small children that have been the same forever. They have now pushed those all back because so many children are now failing to meet normal developmental milestones. And that was crazy to me. Have you heard that?
Basically, that's a product of COVID.
Oh, wow. That's well, and another thing, you know, like I keep referring to my son, he's 25 in like a week and a half. So he was born in 2001. And when he was in kindergarten, which would have been around 06, I remember there was a billboard, and I've said this on the show before. There was a billboard on the way back home from his school to our house that said, one in 150 children develop autism. And by the time he graduated from high school in 2020, it was one in 36.
Yeah.
In one child's kindergarten to 12th grade, 12, 13 years, it went that high. That's crazy.
There's two different...
one in 150 is a lot to me.
There's two different surveillance programs that they use to track that, and both are very inadequate. The main one actually uses data on eight-year-olds. So when you think that you're using data on eight-year-olds to get a current number, you're actually still several years behind.
Wow.
That being said, you can actually remove the females in certain populations and get one in 20, a number of one in 20 in California and
wow.
populated areas in certain counties. It's a problem.
And I've also seen a lot more parents that have more than one child that develops autism.
The genetic sensitivities and susceptibilities do get a lot of times shared because they are genetic.
Right.
And then the environmental triggers a lot of times are shared also.
Right. You eat the same food. You live in the same house. You have the same air you breathe, water you drink. You know, the same mama cooking the same food. It makes sense if they're genetically vulnerable and also following the vaccine schedule and the customary American diet for children these days. It's a perfect storm. Plus that and throw an antibiotic at it every time you sniffle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a big part of things. What I wanted to talk about, though, is CBD's relationship to autism in general.
Yeah.
It is the first recommendation for a lot of patients, and there's a reason for that. Going back to it's hard to give children supplements, so if we're going to choose one, I would want to choose one that treats a hallmark feature of autism.
Right.
One that would give us results and not cause harm.
Right.
A hallmark feature of autism that although it's downstream and not the cause, it is certainly a cause of their current discomfort and lack of development. Now, identifying why the inflammation is there and how it got there is a different story. But we know that their brains are inflamed.
Right.
We know that they're not developing and that language and things have been shut down. So
right.
Epiduol is a wonderful first step to treat that neuroinflammation. It's not going to fix your child per se, but you can get a lot of benefit.
Right.
You can get language, you can get quality of life, gut improvements, a little bit of immune system benefit in some cases.
Yeah, the first story I ever heard about a kid with autism taking CBD successfully was actually someone that I went to school with, the mom. And at the time, I was in Louisiana, I went to school with her. And here in Satsuma, I was at somebody's house when I first came across CBD, and we were watching a video, and I realized during the video, hey, I know them. But their child was 18 years old. He was normal till he was 3, and then he stopped talking, stopped developing. I mean, this kid was 18, watching Buzz Lightyear and the Teletubbies and sleeping in pull-ups at the foot of his parents' bed. Nonverbal, aggressive, and after one 25-milligram serving of full spectrum CBD, he spoke his first words, and it was about Buzz Lightyear, and I'll never forget that. I cried because I knew the parents, and hadn't seen him in forever, but I knew what that meant. And you know, he's like 27 now, and he's very verbal. He'll never be normal, but man, the leaps and bounds that kid made, just being able to express himself, and now they're building him his own tiny home behind their house because he's 27 and he's a man and he wants to, to be independent. But that was never even a thought 10 years ago before they tried this. So the just being able to communicate with your child, I cannot imagine not being able to talk to my kids or not knowing if they understand me talking to them. Just that alone. But you're right, the neuroinflammation, that's the inflammation in the brain, but it will also help with inflammation in their organs and in their gut too, to help with the detoxification process. That's one of the most important things that people really don't realize about CBD and how powerful it is at that, for that, the neurological and the physiological issues.
Yeah, Blair, she was constipated, obviously had gut issues when we first started with the Epiduol, but it did shorten her bowel movement, lessen the inflammation within her bowel. She was able to be a little bit more regular without gut treatment at that point.
Right. That's very important. You know, you don't want toxic sludge sitting in your kid's gut and not being able to get that out of the body, because that's just, and then we don't even have time to get into parasites. but as sure as you're ready to talk about it, you let me know and we'll do this again, because that's something I've learned a whole lot about in the last 2 years, and I want to be able to talk about that, because I think people assume we don't live in a third world country, so that's not a thing, and it surely is. We're running out of time. What do you suggest for families that are listening that haven't heard that CBD could help their child, or are curious, don't know where to turn? You know, tell us how we can find you and find your clinic and more information just before we run out of time.
Yeah, so www.blaircomplexcare.com. That's my website. You can find me on Facebook under Dr. Preston Brooks. My number is listed. You can it's actually textable. I prefer you text me and we can set up a free intro call.
Yeah.
That's typically how I operate. I do offer free introductory calls to anyone interested in joining the practice.
Yeah.
So that's the best way to get up with me. Going back to the parasite conversation, you know what I tell people in regards to that?
Hmm.
When was the last time you were wormed?
Exactly. I've done it. I've done it once, and it absolutely made a huge difference. And I am long overdue to do it again. But it made a huge difference. Just the sugar cravings alone, I really was surprised at how effective it was for that. You said you do virtual appointments as well?
Yes, ma'am. We work with people across the nation.
Right.
Yeah, we do a lot of all the labs for all of my patients actually get sent to their home.
Okay.
And so they're able to
see it for themselves. What a concept.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I come from a background where conventional medicine not only made me an addict for a long time, but it took the life of my son. And so there's no love lost between me and the conventional way. So I appreciate knowing that there's someone in our community. You're not only suggesting CBD, you're suggesting detox and diet and all sorts of different modalities and therapies and supplements.
I will say this year alone, we've stabilized around three people with cancer, different types of cancer.
Wow. All right, well, we're out of time for tonight. Thank you so much, Dr. Brooks. Join us next week for our next Back to Basics episode, How It Works with Ryan Wagaman, all the way from Iowa. God bless you guys, and God bless American hemp and cannabis. Good night.